Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll. Welcome to another episode of Iconic Moments in Movie History. Hey, what am I watching? Spinoff. And this is actually the first spinoff in the entire Holonineverse, but I'm sure it won't be the last. Joining me tonight, and I am your host, Dave the Clone, will be Cousin Evan.
What's up, people?
And Gomez, not Adams.
Hello.
Who's the, would you say, like, were you the one who kind of spun it and made it into the spinoff of the, what am I watching, Holonine?
I think it came down to the fact that we kept on talking about all these other movies.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the movie that we were supposed to be actually talking about.
Yeah.
So we decided that, you know what, let's just have a podcast. Let's just do a couple of episodes where we're just talking about that, those moments in movies that we're going to talk about anyway.
Because that's what it is. It's like the moments that connect when you have these little squirrel sort of tangential moments, you know, that kind of just lead down the rabbit hole.
Absolutely.
And so for tonight, we will be talking about, you know, apropos for being midsummer here, 2016. This is our Summer Movies Volume 1, where we'll be discussing, up first, I think, Jaws.
Absolutely, 1975.
And when you say Jaws, there's, like, plenty of scenes that come to mind, I think. But there's, you know, I think some of these scenes we try to pick are iconic in ways that they kind of transcend not only just that movie, but, like, they pop up referenced an awful lot in other movies, and I don't know if
just in everyday life.
There's one that kind of like just fits everywhere, and it's that we're gonna need a bigger boat.
And actually, it's you're going to need a bigger boat.
Oh, see, I thought it was we. I always
No. He's talking to the captain.
And Quint just did not like hearing that.
He's like, "What do you mean?"
Well, yeah. You know, Brody did not exactly like seeing the giant shark pop up as he's dishing out the chum.
Now, was that, like, where the first ever complaint of how fake the shark looks comes from? Because I remember the first time watching that movie, and when that giant head pops out of the water, it's just like, there are monsters in the world. There are real-life, actual monsters swimming around in the ocean, and we're apparently all cool with, like, you know, being out there swimming and stuff with them.
Like, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, look at two-year-old little Timmy. He's just kind of, yeah, he's in the deep end, but he's fine. He's good.
There's just a great white out there going
to
eat him.
But I also think it goes to the fact that, for a good chunk of the movie, you'd never see the shark.
Mm-hmm.
And that's scarier. And that I mean, there was this whole idea that what you don't see is actually scarier than what you can't see. So if you look at the original Alien movie, where for the longest time you never see what the hell is out there stalking them.
And then when you finally do, it's kind of like, whoever came up with this really needs to be locked up. Like, it's like, this is one of the scariest looking creatures in cinema history.
It's one of the most iconic looking creatures in cinema history. I mean, you could put that up anywhere.
Of course it was.
And then, you know, a lot of these, it's ironic that we're mentioning all these because all of them are sort of homaged or referenced in that new awesome show on Netflix, Stranger Things. So if anybody out there hasn't checked it out, please go ahead and do that. Not that you need it to enjoy the rest of this episode because a lot of these movies are from way before that was ever created, but some of them are the movies that helped to create it, helped to influence its creation, this one included.
But just a look on Brody's face, on Roy Scheider's face, as he goes like, "Weird dude."
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you just see the head, and you instantly know the boat we have is not big enough for this. It's like, think about that. That's like you're like on Godzilla's eyelash. You're like, this 12-gauge shotgun isn't really going to do much right here. You know, actually, in the new movie, when what's his name, Kick-Ass, is just lying there in that boat that has the nuke on it, and it's like, I guess at first it's Mothra is about to get him, or whatever their okay. version of Mothra is. And it's like coming down and he's pointing up that 45 at it. It's just sort of like in Saving Private Ryan, that Tom Hanks last stand moment.
Against
yeah,
the
pointing
tank.
It at the tank and just shooting it and yeah. shooting it.
That's kind of like what Brody was thinking when Jaws' head popped out of the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he was like, I don't even have a gun right now, so all I'm armed with is a bucket of fish guts.
But, I mean, I think a lot of that, too, is the, you know, idea that the boat was their weapon for the most part. You know, in Quint's mind, that was their power, was that they had this boat and that it makes him a king of the sea. Like, and there's no way he's relinquishing that title to a fish.
Yeah, he's yep. like, oh, I have modern technology. What are you, just a fish? Well, this fish is also going to eat you in about 15
minutes. I have millions of years
minutes.
Of evolution coming to kill you.
Yeah, about three rows of 2,000 teeth. All razor sharp just for you.
I survived the dinosaurs. What do you got, little man?
But he didn't even have modern technology. You know, he had modern technology in that, yes, this boat is made of wood that was processed in a plant that used band saws. You know what I mean? It's not like he had, like, Richard Dreyfuss's boat in that movie had the modern technology.
Not that it did him much good.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they didn't get attacked, did they? Not in that boat.
Even so.
They didn't use it very much, actually, when you think about it. They could have had that following the orca, but...
That would have helped.
Yeah, well, I guess this is what happens when you get to rewrite the movie in hindsight and be sitting here going, but at least it's still, you know, and that's the fun thing, too, is that even these movies that have these giant plot holes or these things that you suddenly think in retrospect don't work, they still had those moments. They still had the, we're going to need, or you're going to need a bigger boat. A lot of people will say that, like, you know, when I was working as an electrician, it was just sort of like you didn't have enough drills, and you're just like, yep, you're going to need a bigger boat. We got to go back and get the drill bit, you know, or whatever it is.
Absolutely.
It just becomes a part of the, like, vernacular of the time.
And, I mean,
can we also appreciate the name of the boat, the Orca?
Because yes.
The killer whale.
Yeah, because orcas kill great white sharks.
Really?
Yeah, a little bit of nerd trivia for you there. Orcas will go out of their way to kill a great white shark. Like, for no reason other than sport. I'm serious.
Yeah, there's some messed up stuff going on with sea creatures, right? Like, aren't dolphins rapists?
Yes.
Yeah, there's about 15 to 16 dolphin rapes a year.
Dolphin rapes of people.
Yes, of people.
We're out here.
Why would they do to all your dolphins?
We're out there hunting great whites, meanwhile dolphins are in the water raping.
Like, we're like, oh yeah, no, like we're just gonna go swim with them, like in like a pool, like an entire bin.
Have they figured out why this is? Like, what's?
Oh, it's like a male dominance thing. Like, cause like another little bit of nerd trivia for you: their penises are like arms, like they can actually reach around and grab things.
Oh wow,
that's an image that's gonna haunt me for days.
Yeah, haunt yourself with it. Haunt yourself.
Haunt yourself. It really, like, tentacles and testicles aren't very far away in that world.
Jesus.
But at least it's, like, just trying to, you know, spread its love. It's not trying to bite you in half. Like when Jaws jumps on the boat at the end.
Yeah, and just bites him in half.
And roars like a lion.
Yeah, he does. He does have a roar, doesn't he?
In all these movies, they always make the shark roar. Like, in The Revenge, when it's popping out of the water because of the strobe light that it swallowed. Every time it comes out of the water, it's like... like, it sounds like a fucking dinosaur.
It's kind of that's probably the idea, because, I mean, otherwise, what, you're just going to have it just pop up and blow air bubbles at you?
And just be like, I'm a shark. I mean, all they do is move their mouths with no sound coming out of it. Land shark. Yeah, I don't know what you could have done. I guess at the time, I remember watching the fourth Jaws movie as a small child at my grandmother's house and being afraid swimming in our 2-foot kiddie pool that we had filled with the hose in the backyard, just because the concept of in the water there are monsters.
Yeah, but it's like this movie really sparked a whole outrage of like, just sharks are real things. Like, human beings aren't the biggest, you know, biggest thing on the food chain when you go into the ocean.
Right.
And it sparked this whole thing to, like, just go out and kill. They killed hundreds of great white sharks just because of this movie. This movie had that effect on society when it came out.
Because people are assholes.
Yeah, exactly. And sharks are just, great white sharks specifically, are just, in the last couple of years, starting to come back to Cape Cod into Martha's Vineyard.
For revenge.
Exactly, yeah. They're all coming back just to eat people. Like, yeah, like, we'll show them why they got rid of us in the first place.
Like, according to these movies, it's always the same family, right? Like, all the sharks in all the movies that followed are from the same family or the same pod.
Yeah.
Because it's like all of them, sort of insinuate the idea that they know the Brody family. And then, so it's like they're kind of
like
always...
Jaws 2, isn't it his mom? Like, the shark's mom?
No, Brody's still alive in 2, and then in 3, it's in the SeaWorld place. But 4 is where it's Brody's mom.
And it's... No, I mean, like, the mother of the shark. The mother of Bruce. Which
oh.
is the shark's name. Yeah, the mother of Bruce goes after the Brody's family in Jaws 2. Like, they, like,
while the kids are all out on the boats. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, they deduce that it was Bruce's mom.
That's hilarious.
That she could smell the blood of Bruce on them.
Yeah. You killed my child!
And I will eat you.
All this in the era before the internet, where they didn't have like fanfic or like websites where you could be like, "Well, here's the crimp notes from the show bible when they were shooting."
Yeah,
the movie.
Not even close.
There's
yeah.
a deleted scene where where Richard Dreyfuss calls back in the lab, says, "Yeah, we were tracking this one named Bruce," and it's like going crazy.
Oh my god.
Well, yeah, man. Whenever you see Bruce's head come out of the water, you know you're gonna need a bigger boat.
Yeah,
absolutely.
All right, well, just a little bit of into the next decade there, a little over 10 years later, there was another movie, summer movie, because, I guess we should also mention that Jaws also kept people off the beaches of 1975.
Yeah, it did.
Nobody went in the fucking water at the beaches. It's almost like they wanted such realism, the meta of it was that a movie about people not wanting to close the beaches because of sharks actually got people to, like, not go in the water at beaches in real life. But
I love the fact that one of the reasons why that they couldn't show the shark in the first place was because they originally were going to show it earlier, but as soon as they put the shark in the water, it sank straight to the bottom of the ocean. Like, they didn't bother to test it at all at first. Like, oh, no, it's fine, just put it in the ocean.
And how much did that cost? Be like, oh, there it goes.
Oh, shit. Anybody know any divers?
Hi, yeah, this is Steven Spielberg. Yeah, that shark, we gotta build another one. We need to do it, like, tomorrow. Like, it needs to be here tomorrow.
I
don't know if that's possible, but... It needs to be possible.
I need a new Bruce.
Yeah, Bruce is gone. We don't have a backup Bruce. Don't let me down, Bruce.
Is here. Bruce away.
Don't let me down,
exactly.
Bruce.
Anyway,
yeah.
Moving on to 1987.
Yeah, 87, where when you would go up to the Catskill Mountains.
Well, let's be fair. The movie was made in 1987. It was set in the 1950s.
Right. Well, but still, we're talking about the time we would have watched it. So we would also associate it with summertime.
Exactly.
A summertime ritual that I never experienced, but oddly enough, we felt like we just went along for the ride on this one. A little movie called Dirty Dancing. But the scene we're going to be talking about tonight, when you say Dirty Dancing, so many scenes come to mind. But this one really... Nobody puts baby in the corner. we're keeping it badass. It's like, you're gonna need a bigger boat. Nobody puts baby in the corner.
Baby in the corner.
It's all actions, all action dialogue on this podcast tonight.
And I love the fact that he's talking to her dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a certain level of badass there where it's like, I've got such the high ground morally that I'm going to risk this. You're not treating your daughter like this.
Exactly.
And I guess that's every father's greatest fear, right? Is when they are like, let the kids out of the nest, particularly when their daughter gets married, and it's sort of like, there it is. The
and
end
she
of
goes to have the time of her life.
The end of my authority. Nicely done, dude.
There.
Well done.
I love the fact that this was done by a... Dirty Dancing was never supposed to be a big movie. It was done by a company that was used to doing, like, direct-to-video.
Is this Village Roadshow?
Yeah.
I remember seeing that logo so much. Well, this movie happened to be one of my sister's favorite movies of all time, so growing up I watched it a lot. I thought that was an oddity as a guy. to have seen Dirty Dancing as much as I have. But apparently it was a pretty big movie.
Like, that is not the only odd thing about your movie watching history there, Clone.
And anyone following throughout the Hollow Knight Network might be have some clue as to what might be being referenced there. And if you have any idea, write that in to hollow9podcast@gmail.com. That's the word hollow, the number 9, I-N-E, podcast@gmail.com. Hashtag that clues about clone. And then put your guess as to what the hell everybody's talking about.
But so, and I love the fact that, like, okay, we're going to release it for 1 weekend and then we'll be done. And like, oh, wait, everybody's going to see this movie now.
This is like a new kind of Star Wars in a way. This is Twilight before the Twilight happened, you know what I mean?
You've figured out the strange alchemy of creating the perfect chick flick.
But it's like, I don't know, the whole thing about it, like the whole family going to summer camp together, you know, it's sort of like this weird alien thing, but as for some reason watching this movie as a kid growing up, it was just like, okay, I guess. And
it kind of made me think of like, that was like the Club Med back in the day.
Hmm.
So everybody kind of went and the kids kind of would go off and do their own thing while the parents just sat around and drank.
Because like, we definitely cover some movies on our What Am I Watching podcast, and I don't know if those episodes have come out yet, but there's all kinds of summer camp experiences that you think you might not want to have with your parents in tow. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Very much so.
Some coming of age type stuff, which definitely happens in this Dirty Dancing movie. And I'm pretty sure the Don't Put Baby in the Corner is sort of like the icing on the cake at the end of the movie, spoiler alert. And that's when Johnny Castle is basically like, hey, yeah, let's go dance, and it doesn't matter what your parents think. And now that Nobody Puts Baby in the Corner has jumped and has been reprised in all kinds of other movies, it's all like an empowering moment kind of line.
Yeah, but I mean, looking back on it, though, it's also kind of the moment where, so the guy's doing all the talking.
Yeah.
Right.
True. And the dad says nothing in return because he's
exactly.
So.
And like, she doesn't say anything in return. She kind of just goes along with it.
But it's also like, well, what is she going to, all right, Dad, yes, this is confirmation. He has had sex with me. We have fucked. I know what his penis looks, feels, and tastes like. It's over. There's no illusion to be had. I am not a baby, really, anymore.
If you put a black light on me, you would faint.
Right. Thank down. God they don't
I'll
have
look
those.
At Jackson Pollock painting.
It's another couple years off before those are all the rage, so we won't know for sure. But I know. Just know that I know. That's funny. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like she had already done an awful lot of standing up for, you know, the right, I guess, at that point in the movie anyway. And it's sort of, It actually, I think the whole audience is sort of like, not only because they're getting together, but when he says that, it's sort of like, yeah, you motherfuckers, you know how much she grew up this summer? You know what kind of shit she had to deal with? And like, at the same time, your other daughter is like totally floozying it up and very well could have been that crazy pregnancy situation and having to use the off the grid doctor. Like, God, what are we talking about? Like, that was always one of those uncomfortable parts of movies like this, where like the first half hour you're probably like, oh, I get why we're watching this movie, it's all fun, there's music and this and that, and then all of a sudden, what is this about? Like, why is there blood? Why is there a knife? What's going on?
It's a horror show.
Yeah. Why are people mad at each other afterwards? Was she sick? That's why they got the doctor, right? Like, you're so young, you're just like, oh, she was sick. She just didn't feel good. She had something going on.
She had a parasite. That's what it was.
Oh, God.
It was from a face hugger. It was a crossover from, like, you know, Jaws and Alien combined. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. This is definitely one of those movies where it seemed like a good idea at first, and all of a sudden it's like, well, we're going to be learning about a lot of shit by the end of this, and absolutely. A lot of questions we ask Mom and Dad that just don't get answered, and you're like, oh, well.
And again, I still love the fact that it's set in the 50s, but the hair says 80s.
Yeah, and so does the music.
Oh, but, absolutely. They're like, we just don't care.
Do you know any? Can you think of any other movies or anything where you've heard the "no one puts baby in a corner" and you're just like, oh, ha, yeah, I get it. Like, it really reinforces the idea of what's happening in this scene because it's referencing something else very similar.
How ironic!
I'm not sure if I can think of anything that's actually that's used those exact words.
I know there was one season of Weeds where the FBI were like really hot on the trail of like. Nancy Botwin, and this was when they still had the tunnel from Mexico going to whatever beach town they had moved to after they left Agrestic. And I know that like there was also like this subplot with that character about him having like a gay relationship with one of his subordinate officers, and there was something where like he either like got kidnapped or something, and when he was chained up and like standing up to being tortured, he said something about like, no one puts baby in the corner, tell me who like runs the tunnel. It was like a very like odd placement for a reference to Dirty Dancing, I thought, but it's the one that stands out the most for some reason. I know it's the very oddly specific one to have in mind, but it is, and I'm sure if there are any real hardcore Weeds enthusiasts out there, big Showtime fans, listening to the podcast, they may want to write in or chime in somehow, either on Facebook.
Okay, so here's it's not a direct reference to Put Baby in the Corner, but Point Break. When Bodie is talking about Utah Surfboard being like a 57 Chevy he used to have, he's actually referencing Swayze's car in Dirty Dancing.
Holy crap! Shit. Wow! Thank you, IMDb. Awesome. And that was an accident and a half on our part, because that's actually the next movie on the list.
Okay, so you said there was no connection between... We're finding a thread.
Yeah, but so far it's through the two that, like, you know, both have Swayze in them. I don't know. I mean, Ocean and Jaws is so far the closest thing to surfing and Point Break that we got. And,
pretty much.
You know, there were no sharks in the lake where they were practicing the lift in Dirty Dancing.
It's true.
I wonder, though, is there some way we can connect? But, yeah, that is pretty awesome. 57 Chevy I used to have. And the fact that, like, that whole thing. I mean, I guess, like, when he winds up taking the surfboard off of Bodie's wall, it's like, isn't his, like, big, huge surfboard, like, over in the corner, and that was one of the big flubs of that movie, is that it had gotten broken earlier in the film and shouldn't have been in one piece there.
Okay.
Or does he still have it? I think he still has it later. Like, I think he's still floating on it later or some shit like that. But anyway, I don't know. Is that it for Dirty Dancing? Are we moving on to Point Break? Because, yeah, Dirty Dancing, it was iconic, trust me. Like, the thing is, as iconic as these scenes are, I guess we should make allowance for generational gaps here. Like... Ev, you're since, you know, not to call you out or anything, you're the youngest person on the podcast. So
yeah, by a couple of years.
How far off are some of these references for you? Like, when we talk about iconic movie scenes, I know you're part of the family here. We are big movie buffs. Your dad, my mom, they were big movie buff influencers on us. But, like, you know, how close are some of these references to being completely out of touch for the next generation, do you think?
For my generation, it was like Dirty Dancing was always a quotable movie for my generation. You know, we always throw the quote, you know, don't put baby in a corner around, but I don't really feel like, I feel like at least 60% of my generation really doesn't understand where it's coming from. Hmm. Like, they know the quote, they know the scene, and they know, I've had the time of my life scene, but they don't know the whole fucking movie.
Yeah. They haven't sat down and watched it.
And I feel like the next generation coming up, I think it's called Generation Z.
Yeah,
or whatever, the post 2000 babies are not going to have any idea what the hell Dirty Dancing is, who Patrick Swayze was, or even for that matter, Jaws. Going back to our previous movie, is like that Jaws is almost going to be lost to time with the new generation too, because hell, even my girlfriend never seen Jaws.
Oh my god,
I met her.
Really?
And she'd never seen Dirty Dancing.
And wasn't she going to be part of the Coast Guard?
Yeah, exactly. At one point, she wanted to do that. Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm saying. Oh, my God.
She was like, yeah, no, I've never seen it. And it's just the new generation that's coming up has never seen these movies.
And I hate to say this, now that we're talking about this, it's almost like we're putting it in the zeitgeist, but I bet that means they're going to fucking remake it soon. Like, it's
gonna God.
It's going to get rebooted.
Don't do it.
I mean, you know why?
Look at how many sequels Jaws had.
It's about time that it gets like an H2O, you know?
It's like, I'm not going to feel too broken up about the fact that if they pick that to remake.
But it's like, but it also is in the post-Sharknado world, you know? I'm afraid of what a remade Jaws these days might look like. Like, how much giant CGI shark are we going to have? And
way too much.
But I feel like the person who redoes Jaws is going to be... it's going to go either one of two ways. One,
Zack
it's gonna,
Snyder.
It's, yeah. It,
oh,
one.
No.
Now the zeitgeist is listening, like, tell me more.
The only way it would be worse if it's J.J. Abrams. So
producing Zack Snyder.
It's going to be like a robot. It's going to be like a robot shark. No. But Jaws, it's either going to go one of two ways. One, it's going to be like a real purist. They're going to have like modern, like practical effects. Going to make like an actual like animatronic, you know, robot, like not like a robot but like in the movie, but like a robot, like lifelike looking shark that's going to be real and it's going to look cool. The practical effects are going to look amazing.
Like
or it's going to have like a Transformers-esque movie where it's just going to be explosions everywhere and CGI galore and some chick is going to get naked halfway
like
through
Chris
it.
Pratt and Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, it's going to be starring Ryan Reynolds as Brody.
Oh my god. As Roy Scheider's Brody? Hmm.
Yes.
Oh, God.
See, like, to me, I wouldn't mind a reboot as long as they didn't do anything like that. Like, don't cast a young guy. Cast a guy in his, like, mid to late 30s who's, like, you know...
No, he'd be perfect. The guy who played the cop in Stranger Things.
Oh, wow, yeah. What's his name? Harbour? David Harbour?
David Harbour, like... Perfect middle-aged, not like dad bod rocking guy.
Yeah, but like you need to have if you're living in a beach town, it needs to be like a little bit more like like what William Peterson looked like in Manhunter. You know what I mean? Living in Florida with the beach body, like it kind of needs to be somebody like that. He is not like that anymore. I don't even know what he looks like anymore, but. Couple of those seasons of CSI, I was just sort of like, I can't look at this.
Because of the fact that they're remaking Magnificent Seven, I feel like nothing's sacred anyway.
Yeah, but it also looks like they're kind of going out of their way to make that an eclectic group in that movie. You know what I mean? So
it's not all white men, unlike the first one. So yes, I'll give them that.
I don't know.
On the other hand, like they're saving the pretty white girl, not the Mexican farmers.
It looks interesting though.
But
when we start getting into Jaws, I just start going, you know, part of that movie is that it was like a convention of having limitations as filmmakers. Now it's sort of like auto-tune. There's a lot of shit you can just do without having to do anything.
And, you know, it was Spielberg at 28.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and that was kind of Spielberg learning to make films.
And we also have seen what happens when you make Indiana Jones in 2000s. And it's,
oh, God.
It was painful.
Now just
that never happened. I don't know what you're talking about.
Thank you, exactly.
Think about that with Jaws. When they say you're going to need a bigger boat, you know what I mean? What are we going to be seeing in the water to indicate that? Is it even going to be in water?
I did the fridge. That's going to say
Jaws
it,
in
right?
space.
Oh, God. I don't know, man.
Anyway, down the rabbit hole we go.
That would not be 100% pure adrenaline.
Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll!
Two such iconic lines that they were like completely what the promos were for this movie. Like, I remember walking around, let me see, 91. What grade was I in? Shit.
Well, you were young.
Yeah, I was in, like, middle school, maybe. But I just remember, like, walking around and hearing everybody saying those, like, Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll. Or, like, walking around going, 100% pure adrenaline. Some guys snort for it, jab a vein for it. All you gotta do is jump. And then it's like, the ex-presidents are surfers.
FBI jumpers. And anything else.
FBI agent Johnny Utah has been assigned to the case. Now he must figure out who they are without getting too close.
Speaking of which, I actually read a little bit more about the remake that we all refused to watch.
That I saw a promo for the other day and threw up a little bit in my mouth.
Yeah, exactly. So the premise is they're all adrenaline junkies.
Yeah.
The whole reason they're robbing banks is so they can fund their endless summer.
Well, which is exactly the premise of the original.
No. That's what I'm saying, the original premise.
Right.
The new premise is, no, they're a bunch of eco-terrorists.
Oh, yeah, they're liberating the money to save the world or whatever. Like, oh, yeah, like, you don't have lines
modern
like...
Modern bullshit.
You don't have a little hand says it's time to rock and roll. You don't have a 100% pure adrenaline. You have, like, bullshit. Like, it looks so... Okay, so here's the thing, and I'm going to compare it into in a weird way because I love Michael Mann, but... I didn't love Miami Vice when I went to see it in the theaters because
the remake,
I felt...
The remake, right?
Yeah, the one that came out in, whatever, 2006 or whatever.
So Colin Farrell and...
Jamie Foxx.
Okay.
And Gong Lee.
so not the Don Johnson...
No, the original from back in the day, which Michael Mann also produced, so how the hell did this happen? But, I mean, the movie has...
Money, my dear boy, money!
The money. The movie has grown on me over the years in repeated viewings, but when I first saw it, it just felt like this movie feels so sterile. It feels like a first or second draft of a script that doesn't have enough, like, emotion to it. Like, all the dialogue is, like, so realistic that it kind of feels flat, and... That's sort of what I feel like the new Point Break looks like. You know what I mean? Like, that was one of Michael Mann's missteps. And Michael Mann's movies are all about, like, these subtle, like, scenes. You know, like, we were talking about the diner scene. Or, well, were we talking about the diner? We were talking about the diner scene, right? We
talked about the diner scene.
And, like, that's a very quiet scene in a movie that, like, wants to be very loud. You know, this movie, the original Point Break, is a very loud movie, and that's when you get, like, a line like Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll, being said through a Ronald Reagan mask as you jump out of a van and go rob a bank.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
And preceded by the lock and load montage.
Oh, my God. The lock and load montage.
Which is also very much a part of that scene, where you just want... You don't see any of their faces at all during that entire sequence.
This is the opening one.
Yeah, you just see them walk. You just see them loading their guns, zipping on the bulletproof vest,
putting the shirt on.
You have is Ronald Reagan turning around, going, "Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll."
And then they all bust out of the back of the van and just run in and, "Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, can I have your attention, please? We are the ex-presidents, and we are in fact robbing your bank.
We've been robbing you for years, so just give us 5 more minutes of it."
Five more minutes of time shouldn't make a big difference.
The character Bodie? Bodie's his name? Did he say it's time to rock and roll?
Yeah.
Well, yes. All right, so that's 2 Patrick Swayze quotes that we have in this podcast so far.
Yes.
That are both iconic.
Indeed.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. It's an homage to Swayze. in memoriam of, only he didn't pass away this year, but still.
Yeah,
if we had played it a little bit better, we would have done, like, Roadhouse or something.
Oh, God.
Yeah, as the other summer movie.
Can we also appreciate that this movie had a pre-insane Gary Busey?
A pre-insane Gary Busey?
No, I think this was just before his insanity became public knowledge.
Yeah.
But he was...
Was this movie before or after his motorcycle accident?
This had to be before because he was still like, well, I don't know. He was acting a little crazy in this movie, though. You know what I mean? Like,
Gary Busey was always acting a little crazy.
But this was like, 48
hours?
I think part of Pappet. No, 48 hours was Nick Nolte.
Oh, that was Nolte. I'm sorry.
What's it called? Pappas, part of his whole thing being sort of like a renegade, like. Loose cannon, you know, like that whole thing where he's like, "Hey, we want 2 bricks off the bottom of the pool," and he like screams and acts like a little kid diving into the water. You know, Pappas is supposed to be a little bit off kilter, so maybe it was like leading into.
She was injured in '88,
so it's post.
So this was post motorcycle accident.
It's early crazy Busey. It's pre, you know. What was that? Like, oh, was it The Apprentice or something that he was on with Meatloaf and they almost killed each other?
Yeah.
It was, like, insane.
He was also a potential target in the new Hitman game.
Really?
Yeah, Gary Busey? Advertised it himself, and he was like, "You can kill me
great.
In the game."
You can kill me in the game, kid. Utah, get me too.
You can kill him any way you want. You can poison his spaghetti, or you can shoot him in the head with a sniper rifle.
I've been doing this 22 years. Man, in that time, LA has changed a lot. The sex got dirty and the air got clean, man.
Jesus.
Oh my god.
This is another thing, like, that I've also noticed. Like, Keanu Reeves just does not age at all.
Like a vampire.
He is.
Hey, thank god. That means we'll have John Wick movies for, like, the rest of our lives.
No, but I mean, he does. God. If you look at John Wick compared to, like, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, you can definitely tell that he's aged at least somewhat.
Yeah, to a certain spot bit, and then stopped.
He's got a little more gaunt. I mean, he's lost the baby fat, if nothing else.
Yeah. I don't know, though. You know, see, like, to me, you make a new Point Break, you have to have Keanu Reeves come back playing Bodhi, and then you have somebody new playing the old Keanu Reeves character.
That would have been perfect. Awesome.
That would have been kind of neat, and have him being like, Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll.
I mean, you also have, I love Bodhi's, like, it's 100% pure adrenaline. And this is, I mean, that's the whole reason for their existence.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sums up the entire, their entire philosophy in a statement.
Yeah.
As to why they're doing what they're doing. They're not out to hurt anybody.
Right.
It's they're robbing banks because the insurance is going to cover it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't actually want to hurt.
They also never went for the vault. They only went for the cash drawers. They literally were going for.
And they were in and out quick. They went out of their way to never really hurt anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Until that last heist where they were like,
We're hitting the vault, man! Come on!
We're going for a little bit extra, and look what happens.
Yeah, and they're like, what are you doing? We never hit the vault! We're going on the vault! You know, it's like they all were like, wait, we weren't ready for this audible. What's going on here?
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
come on, 100% pure adrenaline! Ah!
No, that's the kind of shit you need to talk about beforehand.
Yeah, like, you don't just walk in and start pulling this, like, hey, we're going to do this thing that takes an extra 3 minutes that none of us thought we were going to have. What the fuck? And you're going to be shooting people at the same time? Not cool, dude.
He did not plan this.
This is bullshit. Dude's losing it, man. Not 100% pure, man. Not 100% pure at all.
Game over, man. Game over.
Wrong movie, but yes.
Yeah. Sorry.
They needed was Bill Paxton in this, I think. Catherine Bigelow.
But anyway, do we have anything else to talk about with this movie?
Clearly it's got a whole lot of other iconic moments.
We did talk about this movie, which... You should absolutely, if you're interested in what else we have to say about this movie, check out that podcast.
Yeah, it actually, I don't think it has been released yet at the time that we're recording this, but keep an eye on the feed for the What Am I Watching podcast.
Where we go more in depth into Point Break, the original.
The Catherine Bigelow masterpiece.
I have one final thought on Point Break, and it's something that I thought about today when I was thinking about the quotes and I was kind of just going over in my head. The 100% pure adrenaline quote, like, I've seen it recently. I knew I seen it recently, and it was in the Deadpool movie. And he doesn't say exactly 100% pure adrenaline, but he says many times throughout the movie, maximum effort. And it's just before he does something crazy.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's almost like an homage to 100% pure adrenaline, man.
Yeah.
Deadpool would fit right in with that group.
Oh, yeah. Yes, he would. Yes, he would indeed.
Before or after his accident made him. You know what I mean? It's like... Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's, like, these are movies when I just think about summertime, you know what I mean? Like, they just always remind me of, like, you know, having the time off of school and, like, you know, absolutely, having to share the TV with the sisters before it was, like, the age where we had to get jobs and stuff. And but they also were movies that just felt like when you watched them in the summertime, you felt a little bit more, like, in tune with what was going on. And so, you know, for me, every time I would go to the beach or knew we were going to the beach, I'd probably watch Point Break once or twice that week. You know what I mean? Or
better than watching Jaws.
Yes, Jaws, definitely. Although Jaws would be like when we got home from the beach, and it's like, all right, we're safe. We can watch it now.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm further inland where he cannot get
me. Yeah, until they mutate or whatever the hell will happen after the next nuclear war.
Until they come descending down in the tornado.
Yeah, right? May the 4th awaken there. But yeah, so... And, but, you know, in addition, there are other movies that I think maybe from even when we were younger growing up or just that, you know, also had that little flavor of being summertime movies and because they also covered stuff going on in the summertime. But there was this one about this family that would go up to this cabin and they were trying to just have, like, a week or weekend to themselves and then all of a sudden their aunt and uncle and their twin nieces, you know, like, crashed as well.
Gate crash.
Yeah, and they tell the story of the bald bear. That movie would be The Great Outdoors from 1988. starring John Candy and Dan Aykroyd.
God, that movie is so great.
Yeah, but I just love, I mean, that was, I feel like I used to go to a day camp when I was in, like, second grade or the summer going into second grade. And that we all were, like, telling that story about, like, the whole how the ball, you know, how the bear got the hair shot off its head because the hunter or the guy, the lodge owner used to use this, like, lamp. Oh, no, wait. Yep. Is that, it was just that he aimed in the buckshot. Like,
yeah, he aimed.
And it was the buckshot that, like, grazed the bear's head and, like, flat, you know, blew all the hair off his head, so it was a bald bear. But then at the end, when the same bear came back, because they all thought it was a fake bear, but it comes back and turns out to be real. And the guy who owns the lodge where they were renting the cabins brings this lamp that was like a rifle, a shotgun lamp.
It was a shotgun lamp.
And plugs it in and shoots it and hits the bear in the ass and blows all the hair off the bear's ass.
This one knows balls.
Bald on
head,
both
bald,
ends.
Bald ass.
Bald on both ends, as the raccoons tell us at the end of the movie. So that's an honorable mention there, just because that
was very... Big Bear scared me.
Big Bear chased me. I don't, like, think in the summertime I want to go camping in the woods like that, though, but, you know, again, I've never been camping, so...
Oh!
I guess any kind of camping would be cool to try out. Although, I watched speaking of bears, there's this movie called Backcountry. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's been on Showtime a lot. Based on a true story, and it's all about, like, this dumbass who, gets him and his girlfriend lost in the woods on this trail that he used to hike all the time in high school, and gets them lost in, like, a black bear's, like, territory, and definitely winds up getting his ass eaten, and it was, like, horrifying. The sound effects and the sound editing of him dying and, like, screaming for her to run while he's being eaten alive. Oh my god, it's insane.
So it's like Dawn of the Dead, except in the wilderness with a bear.
Wait, is this like a true story? Or?
It's a true story. Obviously, they didn't really maul to death an actor in the movie.
So, it's kind of like an Into the Wild kind of deal.
I guess. It was this thing.
He
was
in the Alaskan wilderness completely unprepared.
Yeah, he was trying to be ballsy, trying to impress his girl. And, like, you know, they show in the beginning of the movie the guy who's like the lodge master is like, do you want a map? If you haven't been there in a while, you should take a map. He's like, no, I don't need a map. And then they run into this guy who's like a guide, and he's like, do you guys need a guide? And he's like, no, we don't need a guide. And then he also took the girlfriend's cell phone out of her bag and left it in the car when she was just bringing it along in case of emergencies. And
dumbass of the movie.
Yeah, he's the one who gets fucking killed. But it's still terrible.
Which... Let me just add, as an avid outdoorsy kind of person,
yeah.
If you got eaten alive by a black bear, you deserve to get eaten alive in general by nature, just because black bears are about the size of a medium-sized dog.
Oh, no, this thing was huge in this movie.
Then it might have been like a brown bear or something.
Even so, like, you're being a dumb shit for not taking, like, safety precautions.
Yeah. It's pretty
bad. Actually, speaking of that kind of movie, I got to actually... hear talk from the guy who 127 Hours was based on.
Oh, really? The real you met him, yep. Or you saw him live in person?
Exactly. And he's talking about, like, he decided to go to Utah. Didn't bother to tell anybody where he was going. Didn't tell anybody what trail he was going on. Didn't have any way of communicating with the outside world. Nope, just decided to go. In retrospect, he realized this might not have been a good idea.
This might not have been the best plan.
Yeah, it's like, you know, there was this other movie speaking about bear attacks and being out in the wilderness and not prepared, called The Edge with Alec Baldwin and Anthony Hopkins. And the only reason I bring it up is because Anthony Hopkins' character is a very well-read gentleman who's never been in the woods before, but he's the one who winds up, like, surviving it because he read all these books. And one of the things it says in the book is that most people, when they get lost in the wilderness, what do they die of? Not starvation, not shock, it's pride. It's like they just thought they could take on more than they could, or they didn't know to, like, signal for help, you know, or that they should put effort into trying to be found. They always just try to survive on their own, and, you know, their pride is, like, too strong or too intense for them to, like, think about it logically.
The
other lesson you could learn is, tell people where you're going.
That too. Well, the pride is part of that, I think.
I understand, but, like, oh, hey, Mr. Ranger, I'm going out for this trail. Mm-hmm. Okay? Oh, if you don't see me in, like, 12 hours, maybe send somebody to find me.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, the one thing that I've always been taught in every, like, wilderness survival thing that I've taken, or anybody that I've ever, like, really kind of showed how to live or survive in the woods is Mother Nature is a total bitch. And the sooner you realize that, the sooner you're going to have a better time.
Exactly. And you know,
Mother Nature will fuck your day up.
There's nothing wrong with asking for a little bit of help now and then.
Exactly. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with saying, hey guys, can you just throw me something real quick? Just throw me a bone here.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway. Yeah. So, other honorable mentions. Weekend at Bernie's. Come on.
Oh, God.
I mean, the classic. I mean, it's been referenced so many times. Like, hey, guess what? We're going to take this corpse, and we're going to have a great time.
Yeah.
Awesome time.
I always took for, you know, so for me, it wasn't even really about the fact that it was this dead guy that everyone thought was alive. I just was like, man, I wonder what you got to do to be lucky enough to live out there where they're just partying the whole weekend away, like literally just going from house to house, party doesn't stop. And it's like,
it's Bullshit Artist the movie.
Yeah, right. From the world of finance, we bring you people like buying each other's murders and,
yeah,
you know, to the point where like then the guys who find the body are like, well, what if we pretend this guy's alive? We could just hang out in his house. It's like, so much of this movie is just wrong, and also like based on the premise of like just go with it, because immediately you start thinking, well, after a couple of days, isn't this guy starting to smell? Like,
it's not even
going to
take a couple of days. Time out in the sun, really?
Yeah,
really.
Going through all these iterations of like being buried in the sand, then see, being like,
yeah, you know, things are getting stuck in places they shouldn't get stuck.
Oh God.
On top of that, the body should get the, like, you know, the what the body goes decompose through. It definitely shouldn't be in one piece.
I mean, how are they moving it that much?
They take it to, like, you know, it goes on the boat and it falls off the back of the boat and they're dragging it and it's hitting all these buoys. Like, the face at least should be smashed in. You know what I mean? Like,
it should be fish bait at that point.
Half of the movie, yeah.
Actually,
like,
Jaws should be coming up.
Yeah, going, Jaws comes out.
Jaws!
There we go. Jaws connection to Weekend at Bernie's. Oh, that's too funny. And, like, you know, the people surfing on the Latigo Beach in Point Break will see it go down and be like, whoa, man, like,
pure adrenaline.
Saved you.
I just got eaten by a shark.
Saved your life, bro. Close one.
Impossible to believe thing about Weekend at Bernie's is that there was a Weekend at Bernie's 2.
Yeah, which was, I mean,
are you serious?
Sad, that one. I mean, I've seen it. That's the sadder part, but... Yeah, it's pretend it doesn't happen. Just pretend it's over. Yeah.
Just put it that way.
Although I guess we may do it if we watch the first one for What Am I Watching, but we'll see. And then I like to throw in a little movie that I had heard so much about before I finally saw. I saw it on cable and actually was like, it was one of those things where you're like, oh, this is that movie? And then when you finish watching it, you're like, well, shit, not only do I want to watch that from the beginning, but I might just go out and buy it on DVD because I liked the ending so much and holy crap. And the only thing I had heard about before I saw this movie is the scene that I'm putting on the honorable mention list. And this is the movie from the year 2000, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, directed by Danny Boyle, who you may recognize from a little film called 28 Days Later, or Slumdog Millionaire, or Sunshine. There's like tons of movies this guy's done that are awesome.
He's done a lot of work.
This movie, it was called The Beach, and it was all about these kids who are, you know, doing the backpacking around Asia for the summer, I guess.
And they want to go to an island that no one's really been to.
Well, they get
the exotic.
They get a map from this guy who, when they're in Thailand, is like being all loud and rowdy in the hotel and like banging on everybody's door. And his room happens to be right next to Leonardo DiCaprio's room. And, you know, this movie really opens your eyes to how the hostile or slightly, you know, low-budge hotel experience in Thailand or some of these Asian places is going to vary greatly from what any expectation you might have of what hotel might be.
I will throw out that Danny Boyle also did direct 127 Hours.
There you go. Connections abound.
Hey, you know, it's almost like we planned this.
Yeah, for real. But the fact that we didn't is almost scary to me sometimes, but I'll take it and run with it. It's all good. And so, like, you know, this guy gives them, like, he kills himself, but he leaves a map, like, in Leonardo DiCaprio's room, like, pinned to his door. And then he kills himself, and the next morning everybody's getting questioned about it. But, like, when Leonardo DiCaprio looks at the map, he finds out that it's to an actual island that's, like, off the coast that they would have to, like, he had to figure out a route to get them there. But, like, him and a couple other people from that hotel decide they're going to go find it. And when they do find it, it's, like, one, this huge field of pot just growing there, and then they find, but it's also being guarded by these guys with machine guns.
Because it's a huge field of pot.
And then they find, on the other side of the island, this, like, colony of people who are just basically living there on vacation, like, forever. They've been there for, like, months, and it's like they've
because
got...
Because they're not allowed to leave because of the huge field of pot.
Not, it's not that they're not allowed to leave. They're free to leave. It's just, like, it's hard to get to that island. Like, they had to swim 4 miles across, like, this gap from, I forget what island it was off of the coast of Thailand.
Doesn't really matter.
But, yeah, and it's like they're deciding to give up, like, the creature comforts of civilized life to basically just live on an island like a bunch of hippies in a commune. And they grow their own pot there, so they're just, like, smoking up and being on vacation all the time, playing volleyball, you know, and you don't really see any downside to this life until things happen, like a couple people get bit by sharks and just have to, like, die because they don't have any medicine or a medical facility, and they don't want to take people to a hospital because they don't want anyone to tell them that they're there. The one guy has a toothache, and they just have to, like, rip the tooth out of his head. It's like there's all kinds of
worst vacation ever.
It's awesome.
I've never seen this movie, so just listening to it, it's like, oh my gosh.
It's awesome until it's not awesome. You know what I mean? It would be the kind of thing that, like, you
it's
get
awesome
there,
until it's not.
You get
it's
there, and
Far Cry 3, the movie.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's like you get there, and for the first week, everything's great. Then all of a sudden, they run out of toilet paper, and you're like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? Like,
so, exactly.
What are
I'm
we supposed to do?
I'm on the IMDb right now of this movie. The budget was $50 million. It only made $39 in America and £2 million in Britain. And they paid Leonardo DiCaprio $20 million for this movie.
He kills a shark, dude. You gotta watch this thing. It's actually, it's getting a cult following. It's gotten a cult following after, and it's like, you know, afterlife.
This was not one of those films where, like, oh, Leo should have gotten the Oscar for this.
Not at all.
Not even close.
But I think the reason that it actually suffered so, and, like, since we've gushed all over the whole movie so far, is because of the sequence that gets it on the honorable mention list, and that's this video game hallucination sequence that he has. So the whole kind of, like, spoiler gig of this movie is that this island, you know, you're not supposed to know how to get there. The guy who made the map and gave it to Leo, he was one of the people who was part of their colony. And he was played by the guy who plays Francis Begbie in Trainspotting. But in this movie, his character's name was Daffy. And he leaves the map for Leo. And then, like, as they're making their way to the last point where they're going to have to swim to they're on their own to get to the island, they run into these other travelers who are telling them about, like, these, like, you know, road legends about traveling around these areas. And one of them mentions this island that is supposed to be hard to find, and that if you get there, there's this giant field of weed, and, you know, it's paradise. And Leo winds up making a copy of the map and having to leave it and leaving it for them because he felt like it's part of this traveler's code to pass along parts of your adventure. And that's a big no-no. And once he's been part of this colony, and these other people actually do find the island, he has to, like, wait for them in the jungle and get the map back from them and tell them to leave. And he's, like, waiting and waiting and waiting, and he starts to go kind of crazy, and he starts seeing the jungle as if it were a video game on his Game Boy.
And we're not quite sure what he ate.
Yeah.
Or licked. Or drink.
If he even ate or had anything, it could have been just a hallucination from starving for all this time. But now, this was all I heard about this movie before I'd seen it. It was like, oh man, yeah, there's a part where he sees everything like a video game, and I was like, what kind of a video game? Like Wolfenstein? And people were like,
apparently
yeah.
It's Banjo-Kazooie.
What?
The video game sequence. I just looked it up. Like, not like the video game sequence itself, but on IMDb, the trivia is that it's Banjo-Kazooie. That's what the video game sequence is based off of. It was a 1998 Nintendo game. It was kind of... It was meh.
It was okay. Meh. It was met with meh reviews. That's
funny.
So it
has a really cult following. It wasn't my cup of tea. It was like a platformer.
Well, it was just like, that's all I heard about the movie. It was like, oh yeah, there's a part where he sees everything like a video game. No one ever said, but it was because of this, like, being starving out in the woods for, like, days and days and days, and... What's it called? Like, Tilda Swinton is the one who runs the colony, and she's the one who, like, assigns him to stay out there. But, like, there's also, like, weird sexual tension between them. And no one, like, told me until, I think, maybe years and years later, someone's like, oh, yeah, there's, like, this whole field of pot on the island and people with machine guns and this and that. And I was like, really? I didn't think it was this involved. All I heard was, like, there's a beach and he sees everything like a video game. You know what I mean? It's like, I never really thought there was anything worth trying to explore beyond that. So, because of that, you wind up seeing, and it's a very short, it's like literally 2 minutes. It's not like a very long sequence in the movie. But it was the sequence that, like, I think defined the movie as the movie that deserved to flop. You know what I mean? That was the only thing I heard about. But there were actually, you know, recently I was hanging out with these gents from Britain who happened to be over in the U.S. teaching soccer at a summer camp. And they, one of them was playing their iPod at the barbecue we were at. And a song from the soundtrack of this movie came on, the song called The Beach by All Saints. Okay. And I was like, oh my god, this is from the Beach soundtrack. And they're like, oh yeah, man, that movie's great. And I was just like, oh wow. So you do find people that like this movie because, like, it probably sounds shitty from the way we've been talking about it and the way we're describing it, and definitely from this video game sequence. I thought the video game sequence made me not watch it for a long time because just hearing about it. But it actually is a pretty cool movie. Like, when you watch it, like, the whole sort of, you know, Danny Boyle's known for doing this sort of human drama thing. Like, it's all about, like, human nature and losing your humanity. And so the idea of, like, how much are they willing to give up to protect this little island paradise they have, when is it something that they should be willing to give this all up to protect? You know what I mean? Like, are they being ridiculous trying to live this way? It's pretty cool. It makes you think about things when you watch that movie.
Absolutely.
It's very summery. When you're watching it in the wintertime, you're just like, I wish it was summer. I wish I was at a beach.
And speaking of, people might also know Robert Carlyle from Once Upon a Time as Rumpelstiltskin.
Oh, is he? Who is he on the beach?
Daffy.
Oh, that's Robert. That's what his name is. Robert Carlyle. I'll never forget that now. I always call him Begbie from Trainspotting.
Yeah, I understand, but.
And
it was really weird when my wife started watching Once Upon a Time. I'm like, wait a second, I know who that actor is.
Yeah, right? You're like, oh, here, 28 weeks later, he's also in there. Oh, and there is a shark attack sequence in the beach to bring everything full circle to Jaws.
Oh, God.
It's pretty awesome. Multiple shark attack sequences, found one actually.
That got back there. Anyway.
Yeah. All right, well, there's a lot of iconic moments in movie history there, all from mostly the 70s, 80s, and 90s, which we're not consciously doing, but it just seems like something that happens. We did spill over a little into 2000s with our honorable mentions, but yeah, notice it's more thematic. We're just trying to do it like summer movies, like time of the year. And the fall.
We still do some chasing squirrels here, but...
Yeah, but that's what this podcast is designed for. It almost is like, you know, I remember being at the table in the cafeteria in high school, and we would talk about movies, and this is exactly how it would go. We'd be all over the damn place. Nothing would make any sense. And by the end of it, we're all laughing, and then like, damn it, we got to go back to class. This sucks.
Well, yeah, only now it's like, crap, I got to go to work tomorrow.
Yeah, not happy. Not happy. Well, anyway, it has been fun talking about these movies. There's some information coming up as we hit the end of the show here with all kinds of ways for you to get in touch with us and join in the fun of the conversation. Be part of it. It's an interactive experience. Spread and share the love of the Hollow Nine Network. Be on the lookout for some new things coming your way, some new visual effects, some new video offerings, some new podcasts, and new episodes of existing shows that you love, and some that are just getting created. It's been my pleasure being the host tonight of the iconic Moments in Movie History podcast, joined by
Gomez, not Adams,
and
Cousin Evan.
Stay tuned for more appearances by all three of us on future Hollow Nine episodes and all the other amazing Hollow Nine programming coming at you. Share the player on our Facebook page with your friends and clue them in. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, and enjoy the rest of your summer. Plenty of new programming coming up to help you do that. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Yeah. You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. Follow us on Twitter at Hollow9Cast. That's Hollow, the number 9, I-N-E, cast. Email us at Hollow9Podcast@gmail.com. Or find us at our home site, Hollow9.podomatic.com. Be sure to check out our affiliate, Fangirlzone.com. Find us on Facebook. Rate and review us on iTunes. Join in the fun. Hollow Nine.